You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Now it's time to go in the legal hour that we have once a month. And, of course, we've got the big honcho from Hutchison Legal, Grant Hutchison. Can't do much better than that. Welcome, Grant.
G'day, Alan. It's always great to be here and tremendous knowing it's almost Valentine's Day.
No, we're not going there, Grant. We are not going there. They didn't tell me until too late that it was you coming. Otherwise, I would have said, well, no. Anyway.
Have you bought chocolates?
No.
Are you buying flowers?
No.
Are you going to give words of affirmation?
Probably not.
Well, it's good that she's warned. I hope somebody's listening on heavy heart.
Well, are you going to do all those?
I've decided not chocolates this year.
Yep.
And the flowers you buy around Valentine's Day are rubbish.
Yep.
Sorry, no offence to the florist.
Well, we just lost all our florist listeners, but anyway.
Buy it the week before or buy it the week afterwards, but they store them up and that's...
Because I need so many.
Well, that's right, because it's a huge volume, so it's best to... because sometimes, you know, I heard somebody on another station say that it was within 24 hours they all looked dead. Like, they look great for the day. And it normally roses and other things last so long. A bit like our love. Not for each other.
So let's just go back. Why have you decided no chocolates?
Well, we're I don't know that I get thanked at the end of the day. I get thanked. I get a begrudging thank you, and it's almost, and you're not helping. So
and
I found they don't have, Wendy is, love it a bit, but she doesn't like to share. If I give it...
You don't get them.
Whereby with roses, I get to enjoy the fragrance. Yeah, absolutely. Well, no. Don't buy them. Well, sorry. I'm sure there are some good roses out there, and congratulations to all the florists on making a killing on Friday.
All right. Let's get down to serious. Now, we're again into this idea of bail, I really don't want to take many more calls.
I think you should get bail.
No.
Whatever you've done, I think you should get bail.
I don't think we should take many more calls on bail, because I read today where some young bloke's on his 50th lot of bail, and if he didn't take notice of 1 and 2, well, you're not going to take any notice of 50 and 51 and 52. But anyway, that's another story. Grant, we want to know if the question was asked, and I don't want to get too close on this, but... If a perpetrator breaks into a person's house, mm-hmm. we know that they can use self-defence.
Yep.
But how do you decide what is appropriate? And then the other instance case, if they happen to break into a house where the person who doesn't like being broken into and retaliates,
not many people do,
and that person therefore kills the homeowner, can the perpetrator actually claim self-defence? Like, who can claim self-defence in a crime?
Well, let me start. Basic principles. So there was a case of a burglar who broke into a house and, as a result of breaking in, found themselves in the garage because the people were away, and found himself locked in a garage and he couldn't get out of the garage.
Yeah.
And he was there for, I think, a week. Until the people came back, and he sued the owners on the basis that they provided an unsafe place for his, I think you'd almost say unsafe place for his type of work. Anyway, I think can somebody make a claim? They make all sorts of claims. Should they be successful? Well, no, I don't think you should. I don't think you as an owner of a house should have an obligation to leave your house safe for burglars. Remember, there was that guy that was trying to escape prison and sprained his ankle. More than that, and I think he again wanted to make a claim because he thought it was unfair. So just remember, so it doesn't matter who you are.
Yep.
If something's been, although there should be within boundaries, there should be some restraints around the use of some legal concepts. But the basic concept of self-defence is set out in the Crimes Act section 322K.
Right.
So a person isn't guilty of an offence if the person carries out the conduct constituting the offence in self-defence. Now, this is where it gets interesting. Yep. It's only self-defence if the person believes the so the person, and this is subjective, believes that the conduct is necessary in self-defence, so subjectively, yep. And the conduct is a reasonable response in the circumstances as the person perceives them. So this idea of what's a reasonable response in the circumstances, that's where... So, look, if somebody's coming on to your... If somebody's coming, and yes, they're coming at 1 a.m. without an invitation, and they've got balaclavas on, and... Now, it's one thing to see them and let off a nuclear device in your front yard.
Yep.
That's disproportionate.
Yep.
So if somebody... And so it's always this hard thing. And can I say the police force try to demonstrate... What's reasonable, you know, trying to work out what's reasonable, but what's proportionate? If you have a nuclear weapon, you shouldn't use it.
Yep.
You shouldn't. If somebody's coming they're just coming with their fists.
Yep.
It wouldn't be fair.
Couldn't shoot them.
You couldn't use. Couldn't use a machine gun to mow them down. Or if the only weapon you had was a gun.
Yep.
You'd want to be very proportionate. You wouldn't want to take out. You know. It's one thing to hold the gun up and threaten people. That's another thing to shoot. And the trouble with when people come, and I'm sure you're aware of this, sometimes the weapon that you start off holding to defend yourself becomes a weapon that they take off you.
Absolutely.
And is it proportionate? If somebody's coming at... if somebody, and I think this gets to your point... The second part of your point, if somebody's invading my house and I'm defending it with a baseball bat.
Yep.
Just because I've gone with a baseball bat, if I'm the bad guy and I take that baseball bat off, is it proportionate to then go back and hit the person with the baseball bat? Well, at that point, they don't have a baseball bat.
No,
so it's not baseball bat to baseball bat or sword to sword or whatever else. So I don't think it'd be reasonable. So certainly to then for a perpetrator... to use something saying, well, I'm self-defence. I think they've placed themselves in a dangerous position.
Yep.
So those type of cases, it's unlikely that self-defence would be available as they were engaged in unlawful conduct. But the situation could arise if there was two home invaders.
Yep.
And one was fleeing at the time and the... person came after them with their gun, and that could be you really need to be proportionate and reasonable in all the circumstances. So excessive force, even if you're a homeowner, when there's no longer an imminent threat, someone's running away.
Yep. No.
If they're running away,
let them go.
Absolutely, let them go.
Yeah.
You know, you can shake your fist and they'll probably come back and give you a lot more. So the use of a firearm for a home invader can be seen as an act of self-defence.
Yep.
But if they're trying to flee, it's no longer. It's bringing harm and it really does... It's a very dangerous situation.
All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Leave me be. Check out.
You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And I'm talking to Grant Hutchinson from Hutchinson Legal, and we talk about all things legal. Grant, I want to throw just a question at you, and I know you want to talk about penalties. Now, and this is in the same sort of vein. Well, we were talking a while ago about music policy, about songs that you play and songs that we play on air, we're talking about now. And the point was put up, we've had two or three people, none of them Australians, I think, but who have been made big hits and been played on radio a lot, who've since been found to be... Well, one's been a pedophile, and I'm not talking about that because we all know about Rolf Harris, and a few of them are like that. So should we play music because they were what they weren't what they were when they made the play, or do you not play the music because of what they are now? Now, I won't play them, to be honest. I think that's it. And so now you're going to talk about penalties, which is in the same thing. Should they be sentenced? If the penalties change... What should how do you sentence them? And it's a bit the same with the music. Would you play the music or would you not?
Yeah, okay. Let's put it at not music, but let's put it as artwork.
Right.
Let's find out. Let's say we find out that Da Vinci or
don't get a suit. Well, he's not.
Well, he can't sue at this stage. I'm talking about the one that's been dead a long time. If there's another one. If you find out that they were doing things that wouldn't be acceptable in our day and age, do you not go and see that artwork? Whether seeing, listening? I don't know. I imagine because what's his name? Tarantino, the film producer.
Yep.
And there were certain charges that were being put against him. Does it mean you can't enjoy a movie or if... And I'm not saying he's done anything, but if Alfred Hitchcock had done something untoward, can you not watch or listen or can you not when, what's her name, who wrote the Harry Potter books? And she said something that was considered by some to be not woke or not politically correct. Do you stop children reading the books?
Yeah.
I think you assess the works for the works rather than... But, yes, I don't know that I'd want to be playing things that lead to royalties being paid to people who there's that. Look, I haven't thought it through. I think it's a great question. But how do we deal with people who do make mistakes, and can people get a new chance? I do believe people should be given the opportunity for a new chance in life. Now, that's not bail every time you turn up. We've all worked out that is wrong, and the government's got to do something. We've just seen what's happened when there's inactivity. People need change. But I think let the crime and the time or the fine be reflective. I don't know that we have to punish people for the in terms of not enjoying. I think people are still capable of doing things, even though they're doing things that can contribute to the soul of a place, even though they're, and I'd say it, not all things, but for the grace of God, go I. The fact that I've not committed something doesn't mean that in different circumstances, I just don't want to judge people with the sense of that I'm better than others. And so I hope people could.
But there are some things that you and I just would not do. Not do.
Absolutely. And but you've never been in the circumstances of a concentration camp, you know, of a pressure situation where it's a choice of this one dying or that one dying. And what would we do if we were in that situation? Do we protect ourselves even though we hear other crimes being committed, crimes against humanity, crimes against people? I think it's when you say we'd never do something, I'd like to think there are things I would never do, and that's certainly how I live my life. But I'd never... I just know, and I don't excuse people who commit the crimes, but particularly a crime of passion. you get stuck here and things get out of control, and I just don't know. So I'm not saying, I'd be very careful to not ever give someone a chance yep. again. But
anyway,
what are the consequences? So let's deal with this. This is an interesting one. This is a discussion paper that's come up in the latest Law Institute Journal, and it asks, when you've committed a crime, should you serve the penalty that was in place at the date you committed the crime or at the date you're sentenced?
Yeah, I would say at the date of the crime, because that's what you did. The fact that things have changed further on, but I mean, that's not a legal interpretation. That's just what I think. But
so quite often politicians will have pressure. We want less of that crime, so let's penalise that more. So you're right. Normally, the presumption is it's against the retrospective effect. In other words, if something wasn't illegal when you did it, later laws shouldn't make that illegal, and therefore, and at the same in terms of the penalty, it shouldn't have a greater penalty. Yep. But there are exceptions. So, but let me start with the basic foundation. Yep. Article 15 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and Article 11 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights provides a heavier penalty shall not be imposed than the one that was applicable at the time when the crime or the offence was committed. That makes sense.
Oh, I think that makes sense, yeah.
But what about this? Let's say you commit a crime and it has penalty units, which is a fine. So time is time. We all know that if you do serving time, that's a part of your life that you're missing out on.
Yep.
And that doesn't get impacted by inflation.
Yep.
But if it's a fine and you did something and the fine would have been $400, but when it gets adjusted, because a penalty unit at the moment with adjustments is worth $197.59 or last time.
That's what it is.
That's one unit. So when they say it can, you know, maximum penalty is 1,000, then you know it's 1,000 times $1.97 or... not $1.97, $197.50.
So how do they come up with that? Like, well, they come particularly up... 57 cents.
No, oh, sorry, did I say 57 cents? 59 cents.
Oh, 59 cents.
And I know everyone's writing this down. $197.59 is one penalty unit. So if it's 10, then it's 10 times.
But 10. How do they come up with it at 59 cents? I mean,
because originally it was, and that's the good question, originally it was set... And then eventually they adjust it for inflation.
Oh, 5% or something. So,
yeah,
it
so every year it goes up and it can get adjusted. So, and that's the. But if that changes, the cost of living's gone up. So if you committed and it would have been $400 a few years ago, but now it's going to be, you know, $800, $700 or whatever, should you pay the CPI adjusted amount? So you pay it in the cost of the day when you have to pay it, or when you committed the offence?
Well, it should be when you committed the offence, surely, but...
Well, there's some discussion on that point, and I think there's it's an interesting one. So if it changes with CPI, the net effect on your... In other words, the longer the justice system takes to get to you, the less it costs.
Because that's not your fault, though, is it? If it takes... If they decide they're going to take you to court or whatever and it takes 6 months, that's not really your fault, is it?
It's not your fault, but should you gain from... Should you get a savings?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes.
Okay, look, it's just a thought. It's a discussion paper that's been put up in the journal. But when politicians say, we want to penalise that harder, it's nothing about inflation.
Yep.
So there was a Jacobs Group case where there was the Supreme Court in New South Wales looked at the maximum penalty for a federal bribery offence.
Right.
Now, the maximum back in the time of the offence was $11 million.
Right.
Back in 2010. But by the time he was sentenced in 2021, I always assume it's a he, by the time the person or company, $22.2 million.
So double.
So it's gone up a fair bit. So just being aware that I think so you would say in that case, I believe, the time of the offence, if you want to increase the penalty not to do with CPI, but you want to do it to harden up society, you shouldn't suddenly have $11 million becoming $22 million. When you committed it was $11 million. So look, it's nuanced. It's not hard. It's not easy, but it's one of those things that we've all got to
Now, Grant, there's also been some talk, and I don't know which political party came up with this, that particularly in road offences, that they reckon it should depend on your income. Someone's been saying...
Doesn't that make... I think that sounds like a Greens party.
Well, it does, and I'm not here to push there. No. I'm asking about the legal...
Well, what they're saying, that it should be... it should be... What they're saying with that is that it should be related to the pain that it... Because if you're so rich, if you're Bill Gates and you...
Or if you're a Grant Hutchison...
I get the cheaper one. if it's Bill Gates and he can just say... I earn more money than, even if I'm speeding along and you charge me every second, I'm still earning. So it's no pain to him. Yep. So you want to say, I think part of the rationale of that policy is let's make the pain commensurate with the person so that they feel it.
I think that's what they actually said, that, to a millionaire or a person who's got $2 or $3 million like you have, then $1,000 fine isn't as much as what $1,000 fine is to somebody who's on a pension.
Yeah, I won't question the premise of your answer, but I wish you were right.
All right, let's take a quick break. We're back with more.
Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Now, Grant, I need my pen back before we start.
Are you accusing me of theft?
Definitely would not do that to you.
No, I reckon I'd get bail.
I'm not going to touch it. You want to talk about relationships?
Well, I just think, I know how you really get turned on by Valentine's Day. And it's the polyamorous relationships and the law. There was a recent case that highlighted considerations in terms of the law, protecting the assets of clients that engage in polyamorous. Polyamorous, poly being few, and amorous romance or whatever, love.
So we talk about people have more than one lover or what?
Well, we all know you can only have one wife at a time.
Yep.
In fact, one is more than enough for me. And Wendy says she's...
I hope she's not listening.
No. I mean that in the nicest possible way. I don't know how you could misinterpret that as being negative. I think that she's just wonderful. So why? How can you improve on the best?
Well, quality, yeah.
Okay, so... But some people seem to dilly-dally around. And so if what constitutes a relationship that gives legal obligations?
Yeah.
Because no longer do we have... So clearly it's a breach of the law to marry two people. That's...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just a bigamy, isn't it? So, but the traditional view of romance, of the romantic and sexual relationships, has been challenged, and I'm reading a bit out of something, that by progressive and modern and diverse expressions of love and commitment.
Yep.
So monogamy is no longer required under the Family Law Act. There's that idea that when you... Look, it's... What happens when you've got an ongoing... You might even have an open relationship.
Yep.
It's known. You might have two or three people. Yep. How does the family court... act, divide yeah. things up when you've got lots of children,
because a relationship,
relationships.
For it to be a legal relationship, you don't have to have lived with someone, do you?
No, it's very clear that if you've lived for 2 years,
yep.
then that's a de facto relationship. That there are so many other tests. So.
But if you've got a lover on the side and that's gone on for a number of years, that could still be, under law, created... You've created a...
De facto.
Or relationship, haven't you?
Yeah, genuine domestic... Yeah, look, there's all sorts of things that you can look into. Is there a... You don't have to necessarily live together, but there's a whole lot of tests that you can look at in terms of, is there... Do they maintain a joint bank account? Do they do investments? Do they acquire property together? Do they have children together? Do they... it's not... If it's devoid of a sexual relationship, it can just be a business partnership
yep.
and have, you know, joint bank accounts and investments and acquiring property together. But so what goes on there? But one of the things is, when you turn up, are you seen as an item, a couple? So right. if you're never seen publicly,
right.
there's a few tests. And one,
but
one
then
case,
quite often, like if you're having an affair, then you're never going to be seen together, are you?
It may not be. Yeah.
Game's up.
So there were two cases recently. One is Jones, Jones and the Federal Family Court, and that's 2022. There was a 16-year relationship that included sexual intimacy and financial generosity. Financial generosity is quite different to their living needs. It wasn't that they were contributing to the housekeeping. They might give a gift, and you could just... You know, like breakfast at Tiffany's and then yep. I'll buy you a piece of jewellery, whatever. So what's going on there? But it was a long-term relationship and it had been open in terms of, or the question was what's going on, but is there going to be, was it a non-exclusive? Were there other people? What was known? And so it was all corroborated by evidence given by people.
Yeah.
And so was there financial interdependence? Was there, were they looking after, was there a sense of dependency? Financial independent, were they financially independent? All of these things. So anyway, the court disputed that there was a reputation, that they were seen in public, even though they'd had a 16-year period of relationships, and that... They did not tend to present as a couple publicly, and that was analogous with another case. Anyway, all I'm saying is, life gets complicated. It's easier with just one
boy.
That's my advice to you.
All right, we'll take a quick break.
When you were young and your heart was low. This ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in and cry. Say, live and let die.
listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back, and we're talking to Grant. Grant, AI law, are there any laws around that?
I wish there were. So artificial intelligence, and yep. There's certainly practice note directions given by the court. So if a lawyer wants to use artificial intelligence to prepare a submission to the court,
yep.
Watch out.
Is it?
Oh, absolutely. The directions are that the court wants to know if you've used AI, so you've got to make disclosure.
So they will ask that before a case, will they?
Or? No, it's not even. It's worse than that. I'm sorry, it's better than that. The direction says it directs practitioners who use AI in the preparation to disclose that they've used it. That's part of the disclosure.
So if not, you're almost in contempt of court, aren't you?
You would be in breach of the practice directions, and that is a serious, serious problem. Now, remember this. There have been some cases. AI always wants to be right.
Yes.
So if you tell us, give us a submission showing that, the lunar landing didn't happen or there was something else, AI will present what it needs to present that is the position.
Yep.
Now, in law, they've been found to make up cases that don't actually exist. So it puts a citation for a case where there is no such case. But because AI always has to be right. It'll generally get things, but if it can't find a case, it makes one up for it. Or it had been found in the US. And so a lawyer used AI to put together his submissions, sent them off to the court with citations being referenced to the case that stands for the principle that they're putting forward. And it just, there was no such case. So that lawyer got into his trouble. It's happened in Australia. And so that's why if you're going to use AI, it doesn't stop you having to do your research and do the work and check it. But I think, it's fair for, wouldn't you think, if you're a client and you could have done it yourself using the right AI.
Yeah.
If it only took, the good thing about time costing is that if it only took 6 minutes, because then you should only be charged 6 minutes.
It's not only that, though, is it? I mean, when you go to a solicitor, and I'm not going to stand up for lawyers because that's your job to do that.
I'm sitting at the moment.
But let's be honest. I mean, part of what you pay for is their knowledge, and not only the knowledge, but they know how to find.
Yeah, the application of the knowledge to your case in a bespoke way.
Yep.
You expect a lawyer to be up to date on the law and can find things, not just that they know how to ask the right question of AI.
That's right.
I do think that individuals who think they can run their case using AI, good luck to you. It's like writing your own will. Good luck to you.
Well, now you say that the practitioner has to declare it. Yes. Supposing I decided that I wanted to run some minor case and used AI, am I under an obligation to tell the court, or can I just hope to get away with it?
Yeah, I need to read the practice direction again, whether it's only directed to lawyers, but normally practice directions relate to everybody who appears before it.
So how would I as a person know where to find that? The average person, I've never heard of it, so how would the average person know to check it?
It's new. So for a lawyer, anything in the last 10 years is new.
Yeah.
In this case, it's new in terms of the last 12 months. How do you find it? That's the trouble of being self-represented. You don't know where to find it. And so, yes, it's all there on these days. Everything's on the Supreme Court website. And I suppose if you went to the Supreme Court website and said, what are the rules about using AI?
Yep.
If I imagine it might take you there. There's a search engine that hopefully would do that.
Yeah.
So some form of AI would get you there.
Yeah, because that seems to be a bit dangerous, to be honest.
I think it is dangerous. They're very dangerous to use AI without checking and checking thoroughly. So I think it's where I've found in the past it's somewhat helpful is sometimes someone would bring me a letter and I'd say, oh, look, you're a bit insipid in the way you're presenting it. Take out the personal details.
Yep.
put the letter, put the form of the letter into AI and ask it to toughen it up a bit. And back comes a fantastic letter. But you be careful about confidentiality. AI, if you're paying for it, then they're the product.
Yep.
If you're getting it for free, you are the product. And they're taking and using everything that you can get. So,
got to take a quick break and we're back with more.
Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Now, Grant, you've got a question you want to ask.
Well, I think an interesting point is this. If you leave in your will, you know, that art piece, the Mona Lisa at your house.
The million-dollar one.
Yeah, more than.
It's hanging in your office.
If you've got a Mona Lisa, and you leave it in the will to somebody.
Yep.
But before you die, you sell it. You lose it, you get rid of it, whatever. Or you give it to someone else.
Yep.
What happens to that gift?
Well, because it's not in the... Well, it's not there. Like, your will has said, Joe Blow's got... I've got to get it.
He gets the Mona Lisa painting in...
And it's not there.
It's not there.
I don't know.
And the law is basically what's called... It's called a redemption, which means... Bad luck. So sad. So sad. Too bad. No. That's a colloquial expression. Yeah. But yeah, so sad. Too bad. You've missed out. If somebody had a Rolls Royce and said, "I leave my Rolls Royce to Joe Bloggs," and before they die, the Rolls Royce has been sold or destroyed, you just miss out. So that's the normal rule of redemption when it comes to interpreting wills, but there are exceptions. And if ever you want to explore that, there's some fascinating concepts around how can a gift where the gift doesn't exist. So let's say you had a house and you said, "I leave my house 10 Trumbull Court to so-and-so." But before you die, you've sold that and gone into an aged care facility. Do they get the RAD, the residential accommodation deposit, because that was paid for with that money, right? And that was still... Look, I'm not answering the questions.
I was going to ask you, so did they, or you don't know?
There are cases around accommodation deposits where people have the other way around. So the house was going to be left, and so they've said, look, it's substantially the same asset, yep. but there are certain rules around it, and it's not as simple as falling off a log. So there are rules around this, and so that's whenever it gets murky or difficult to interpret, that's where it's better when it's clear cut.
Yep.
Because keep the lawyers out of it. Keep it so simple and straightforward.
So what you're really saying is this right? Don't actually leave an object in, just leave.
Well, one way to avoid that is to say, you know, upon my death, you know, everything to my spouse, and then, given it's Valentine's Day, of course, everything to my spouse, and then everything to, if that person doesn't survive me 30 days, then everything to the children in equal shares, and so work your way through what goes on. And so it's just a percentage share. But if you leave a specific bequest, be prepared that if it's not there,
bad luck.
You might miss out. It's the normal rule of redemption is it's deemed. You miss out.
Particularly if it's a product, like when you're talking about a deposit or something, which will still be there under another guise, but when you're talking about a product that's sold or an asset that's sold, you're saying just bad luck?
Yeah.
As a rule?
As a rule, and then there are exceptions under the Act, and you can apply to the court for directions. Look, all I know is that the more complicated, that's why keep your will up to date. If there's a significant difference, update your will.
And the trouble is, the more complicated it is, the more the lawyer's going to charge you.
And beware of this, that it could be that you make changes after you then like things could change even though you lack capacity to do another will. That can be hard. So quite often a person gets old, they sell their house, and they've moved into an aged care facility. Well, they may, most people have still have capacity, but so many don't. And if they then change the will to update it, that they may not have capacity to do that. So legal capacity to do a will requires you to understand a fair bit. You need to understand who's in your family, what are the responsibilities, et cetera, et cetera. So, but I hope you're feeling better. I hope, I don't know when I'll see you next, but I hope all the best, Al.
All the best, Grant. And it's been terrific this afternoon. Thank you for coming in. We'll talk to someone from Hutchinson Legal next month.
Take care. Thanks again.
Thanks, bye, mate. Bye.